Welcome to Tips from the Server Room. This podcast is designed for all you systems admins, network specialists, or the guys and gals out there in the office who handles it all. Sit back, relax, grab a beverage, and enjoy Tips from the Server Room. Hey, welcome back, everybody, once again to Tips from the Server Room. This is episode number 45, and this is May the 6th, 2014. I'm your host, Jack, and I'm going to help guide you through this magical world of network cables, wireless gear, and everything server-wise that makes it all come together. Just to remind you, this show is a proud member of the Tech Podcast. If it's tech, it's here. You can check that out at techpodcast.com. Please check out my website where you'll find all these shows, and you can comment on these shows, and I wish you would. It is at tipsfromtheserverroom.com. And you can comment on these shows, like I say, and leave me messages there. You can also call in and leave me voicemail, and that voicemail line is 724-701-0550. Once again, that's 724-701-0550. So if you want to call in and leave me a voicemail, I'd be happy to hear from you. If you have any questions or ideas for future shows, you can drop me an email, and that's jackstechcorner@gmail.com. You can also follow me on Twitter, and that is at Technoman. Folks, I want to say thank you very much for the large outcome and the large outpour we've been having with everybody coming over to the podcast. And I have to relate that back to being inducted into the techpodcast.com family. And I know a lot of you techies out there are coming across from there, and I know that's happening. So I have to say thank you very much for joining me here, and I do appreciate all your efforts to listen to the show and download the shows here. Just a real quick note, and you'll hear more about this at the end of the show. If you want to learn more about Windows Server 2008 R2, Windows Server 2012 R2, or VMware ESXi 5.5, then when you're at tipsfromtheserverroom.com, click on the courses, the online classes at the top, and check out those courses that I do offer on those topics. Folks, tonight we're going to talk about understanding wireless networking and control units. And the reason I'm bringing this topic to you tonight is honestly because I feel that a lot of people out there are not grasping wireless networking. It's not understood, and I think it's something that's kind of put on the back burner. Hey, before we do that, though, I got to tell you, and my wife even looked at me when I was pouring my beer, and she goes, really, you're taking a beer to do a show? And I said, look, I said, each week I drink a beer on the show as I'm recording this podcast, and I'll have to tell you tonight is Samuel Adams Summer Ale. If you get a chance, pick up a case of this stuff. It's a very, very refreshing drink. If where you live, you mow the lawn or you do any outside yard work, it is very refreshing to drink one of these beers after you mow the grass. It's really, really amazing. Okay, so anyway, that's the beer for tonight. And now we're going to get started with understanding wireless networking and control units. Now, a lot of people don't understand the whole essence of wireless networking. And I think that's because when all of us went to school and all of us, at least in my age bracket, started learning about this stuff, folks, I started networking with BNC connectors. I started networking with coax cables, if you can remember that. We worked with like balanced coax and unbalanced coax, and there was so much to know back then. We didn't really have a lot of hubs. It was more peer-to-peer networking where we would connect one computer to the other computer to the other computer. And so that made very, very long runs. And that's just how we learned to network. That's how you network. When the Cat5 came along and network switches and all that jazz started up, it made our life a lot easier. It was so much easier to maintain those networks and connect those networks because now we no longer had to run one computer to another computer, maybe up to a second floor, maybe to a third floor, because you had to run all this coax cable. Now all we had to do was basically run home runs. We had to run our cable from our PC back to a closet somewhere where then we can just pull it together. We can put it into the switch, Back then, actually, it was hubs. We didn't have switches until much later in the networking realm. But that is how we learned to do it. We learned to run a wire to a wire to a wire to a wire because everything was hardwired in. And to this day, no matter how good the wireless is getting, and I know a lot of you wireless engineers out there are going to yell about this one, but today I still believe that if it's wired, it's a better, more solid connection than if it's wireless. Once again, remember that. If it's wired, it's a better connection than wireless. Now, it's not a more mobile connection, but it is a better connection because it's always there. Unless somebody cuts that wire, something should happen to it. And I have stories about wiring, too, I can tell you, from the years gone by. And one time, I was just telling a story the other day. I don't want to get too far off base with the wireless. But one time I had an intern come in that was working with me, and we had him running some cables. Now, we had him running those cables back up through the ceiling tiles, and we were doing all the stuff. Well, I left. I had to go do something. Well, I came back, and one of the other interns came and said, look, Jack, so-and-so, Jim Bob, or whatever his name was really complaining about you. And I said, why was he complaining about me? What did I do to him? I don't think I did anything to this young man. He said he was complaining because he said, we didn't go to school to learn to be computer specialists to run cable. We came here to intern so we can actually learn to learn. They wanted to learn how to load software on computers and how to, he wanted to learn how to network the computers. Well, so I went to him and I pulled Jim Bob aside and I said, look, Jim Bob, this is the way life is. If we don't run the cable, we can't network the computers. That's just the basic part of life. I said, who do you think is going to run these cables if we don't do it? And he said, well, you know, maybe like the maintenance department. I said, no, wait a minute. If you're a technologist, it is your job to know where that cable's going, how that cable's getting to its destination. If the maintenance will do it, and we have a fine maintenance staff, and I'm sure they would. They used to do it all the time for the last tech director. They surely would do it. But when I have trouble and I have to troubleshoot it and I can't find one of them guys, I don't know where that wire is going. I don't know where to trace it down at. It's better if the technologist runs the cables that hooks the computers together. And once I got through that head, through his head, he still wasn't very happy with me because he thought that I was doing something drastically illegal to their internship. But I was teaching them the finer points of networking. And the finer points is, ask my wife how many times I come home with my dress clothes on, covered in ceiling tile soot, covered in insulation dust, and she yells at me and I said, look, hon, that is my job. That's what I do for a living, and I love doing it. So, and you have to love it also. And we're going to be getting into that. We're going to talk a little bit about Cat 5 and Cat 6 here in just a little bit. But right now, we're going to first talk about understanding the wireless networking control units. When I first introduced wireless networking to our school, the only option I had to do was I knew some about wireless because obviously we have home wireless networks. So I kind of wanted to take that idea, and I wanted to take that into the school district, into my business or into your offices. And what most people tend to do is they go out and they buy a Linksys router or a D-Link router, and they plug it into your network. Now, it will work. There is some couple things you got to do with that to make that work. The first thing, this is very, very important. So if you don't have a piece of paper out, if you're not typing on your phone right now, open your Evernote up or your notepad and start typing this. The first thing you want to do is if you put a wireless networking unit in, such as a Linksys or a D-Link or a Cisco or whoever it may be, I don't care what company, by default, all those boxes have their DHCP turned on. And what's going to happen is when that wireless unit, that laptop, that iPad, that Android tablet, whatever, hits that wireless access point, it's going to say, here's your IP address. And what's going to happen is, it's probably not going to get the IP scheme that you're using on your network, and something's going to hold off on that. So it's just not going to work. What you need to do, first of all, is go into the configuration of that router before you plug it into your network. Go into the configuration and turn off DHCP. Just turn it off. You don't need it. Your servers will have DHCP on it. The second thing you need to do, this is very, very important if you're going to manage this unit from anywhere in your network. And what you need to do is you need to go out and you need to actually give it a static IP address. So you have to give it a static IP address, and you will be much happier that you did that. Because what happens is when that unit gets plugged into your network, it's by chance or the way it's designed, it's going to pick up an IP address off of your DHCP server. And if you're sitting back in your office and you want to talk to that box, you'll never see it. You'll never know where it's at because that IP address can change if you allow it to pick up the DHCP address. So give it a static address. And what we did with our wireless gear, we set up a bank of addresses. So I subnetted my Class A addresses down to a Class C. I took part of that Class C, about 100 of those, and set those addresses aside just for my wireless gear. So I know anywhere on my network, if I go 10.16.400.1.2.3, those are all my wireless boxes out there. And 10.16.400 is nothing else on the network. We did the same thing for our printers, and we could talk about that one night. But when you're designing your network, even if it's already designed, go back and redesign your network. Take some time and know where your gear's at. Write those IP addresses down, because what's going to happen is you're going to have a wireless box out there that's going to need reset one day, and you're going to know it's in wherever. It's in the off. It's in the CEO's office, and he calls you, hey, my laptop's not getting on the wireless. You're going to reset it, and you'll be like, oh, what is that address? And I've known some guys that go out, they actually write the IP address on either, they use a labeler, and they put it right on the access point, which is a nice idea. Or they put it, the worst idea is put it underneath and hang it on the ceiling, because now you have to get it down to look at it. But I like to keep a nice little spreadsheet, and it says CEO's office, IP address. And it's just as simple as that. I get on the web browser, I type it in. If it allows me to hit it, I can reset it. If it doesn't, then we have to go out and we have to do a hard reset. We pull the power cable and we plug the power cable back in and reset that box. But that is part of it also, is knowing where that wiring is. Where are they plugged in at? If I put it up in the ceiling, we used to put our access points inside the drop ceiling. They work very well. Don't think they won't work if you can't see them. Radio signals travel in weird ways around your business, around your buildings. They bounce around pretty well. So if you have them in the ceiling, they will work. And don't think it won't. Now let's talk about finding our bottlenecks in our wireless network, because they do exist. And we found one of our major bottlenecks, and I remedied it. I'm going to tell you how I remedied it. The way that we went about remedying our bottlenecks. A bottleneck is, well, it could be a couple things. But the bottleneck, as you know it, is anywhere where you have a high amount of bandwidth coming through and it gets toned down, the traffic gets restricted somehow, that's a bottleneck. Or you get a lot of traffic. This is what we were getting. We were getting a lot of wireless traffic coming through and going through one bottlenecked area. That bottlenecked area is called a local hardware controller. If you want a bottleneck, put one of these devices in your network. What we had was in two different buildings, we have currently running right now, I believe it's 47 access points in two buildings. The buildings are wired together with fiber optics, so we know we have a strong connection there. And all of those devices are coming back, and they were coming back to a local controller. Once they hit that local controller, they all went out over one Cat5 cable that was plugged into our switch. And that's where it received its signal at. That one Cat5 cable is where your bottleneck would reside. Everything coming through there, and I know people are going to yell and complain about this. I already can envision these emails coming in saying, look, Jack, Cisco, Aruba, and whoever designed their gear to allow maximum amount of throughput and have that actual connection and not have a bottleneck. I can tell you this, and this is probably something that I should have looked at early on. You can buy it's called a GBIC, I believe is the proper terminology for it. But it's a little connector that goes into your wireless switch, into your controller. And we can go take that and put a fiber one in there and run fiber optics to our fiber switch. But we didn't do that. We ran a Cat 5 cable. So it would make it better. And it would even make it better if you can buy like a 2 or 3 gigabyte connector to put 2 or 3 gigabyte into that actual controller. So that would help with that bottleneck. But anyway, looking at that, I thought, you know what? There's our bottleneck. We need another solution. We have to find something else that's going to work where we won't have a bottleneck. So I went out. I set out in my little way, and I started talking to companies. And I said, look, we are looking for an engineer out there somewhere that can help us understand the whole wireless concept, understand where this bottleneck is coming from. Because this year in our school, and you may have it in the office, we have what's called BYOD. You may have it in your office. It's called Bring Your Own Device. You may have people coming in with their iPads, with their Android tablets, with their cell phones, and they may be getting on your wireless. You're getting more and more and more connectivity to your wireless, so you have to find a way to provide more and more bandwidth to each access point. This is key when you're running wireless. We call it the end user experience. And you've probably heard that terminology thrown around at a conference you might have went to one time or another. But it is exactly that. The end user should have a well planned out and a really enjoyable experience on your wireless network. When they click on something, they should receive something that they're looking for. You never want your person to, especially in our situation, but let's say in your situation, you probably want to provide a user experience. You want to be known as, hey, the tech guy does a really good job. You don't want this falling over your head. Hey, the tech guy does a really nice job, but his wireless really stinks. We found it's better to put our phones on the 4G or the LTE and use our own wireless connection because the wireless in the building sucks so bad you can't use it. I don't want that reputation. I want the reputation saying, Jack, your wireless is so much faster than Verizon or AT&T or Sprint. I like those compliments and I strive for those. So what I had to do was I had to find a wireless controller that was actually going to be offloaded at the access point is what I was looking for. So I knew what I wanted. I couldn't design it. Obviously, I'm not an engineer of wireless. I just like to install it. So we set out on a mission and we stumbled upon a company, and there's a couple out there that do it, but we stumbled on Meraki. Now Meraki was regionally purchased by Cisco right when we were buying our Meraki access points. And I called them up and I said, look, you were just purchased by Cisco. I think I want to cancel this order. And the reason I wanted to cancel the order is not because I don't like Cisco. I love Cisco. We have a great relationship. I don't like buying smart net contracts. Every year, they charge you like $15 million per component. You know what I'm talking about. I'm exaggerating. But you know that I'm talking about. They charge you a ton of money to have those access points and or have a firewall or whatever. And it's called the smart net contract. Well, it's a pretty dumb way of doing business. Because you have, they do it with their switches too, by the way, but you have people like HP who is now giving you lifetime warranty, lifetime replacement on their switches. I think if Cisco does not step up to that, then they're going to find that they're going to start losing business to people like HP because they just got better customer relations. With that said, I do like Cisco. We have Cisco gear in our racks and we use Cisco and it's fine. But what they did was Meraki allowed Cisco to purchase into them because they wanted a better reach for buying power. Meraki was a small company. They were just a couple groups of engineers that got together to build this wireless unit. And they needed to find somebody that was able to give them a farther reach in the industry. And they picked Cisco, and it's kind of working out okay for them. What is nice about the Meraki access unit is it has what's called a cloud-based controller. So I can control those access points. I can reset them. I can see them on a map anywhere in the world that I have an internet connection. I can bring it up. I can log on to Meraki and I can get right into my system. It's pretty amazing that this works this way. What is really nice about it is when my users hit that access point, they go directly to the internet. They don't go through an internal controller. They go to the internet. Every single access point is offloaded to the internet. We don't have just one Cat5 cable any longer going into one switch. We now have multiple points of access and multiple points of exit out of our buildings onto the internet for our clients, for our students and our faculty and our teachers, your business people and your office workers. And what's nice about that is you can see, it brings up a very, very detailed list of who's on every access point. It'll give you the name of their phone or the name of their iPad. If it's Joe's iPad, you probably know who Joe is in your business. What's even cooler about this thing is it has what's called a heat map. And the heat map, we'll play with it sometimes in the mornings. We turn it on, and what it does, it takes a 24-hour period, and the access points will go from green to bright red to brighter red, depending on how much usage they had the day before. It's really cool to try to drill down and find out where you might need more coverage, where you might have some weak spots. It's just a really, really nice way to do that. In talking about coverage and weak spots, we have to talk a little bit about understanding radio waves and coverage. So many people want to oversaturate their business with wireless access points. You do not need a wireless access point for every wireless device that you have on your network. You don't need that. It's overkill. All you're doing is wasting valuable money for your business, and you know, probably these days it's money they don't have. Our job as technologists, technology directors, and coordinators out there in the world, our job is to find the most cost-efficient way and the best way to use our networks. That's why we started virtualizing servers. And I have friends that are virtualizing their servers, so they'll tell you, I have three servers in the rack, three physical servers, but I have 20 virtual servers running on top of those. Wonderful, you saved a ton of money. Now, turn it around, reverse it, switch it. They'll tell you, but I bought an access point for every single room in my entire school, or I bought an access point for every single room in my office building. That is overkill. The truth is, radio waves work in a 360-degree fashion of an access point. That is just how they're designed. They are not directional. Although you can buy directional antennas, I don't recommend it for this particular situation. This situation, we want 360-degree access to our wireless access points. So when people move around their laptops or their iPads, they don't have to be in any close proximity to the access point. They can be anywhere, and it just simply works. Folks, today we live in a connected society, and I knew this was coming. I've seen it coming for decades, and I mean, I figured this out a long time ago, that even when I owned my own internet business, and I told my partners, one day we will be a connected society. The internet today in your house is just as important, maybe not as high a priority, but it is just as important as electric, gas, water, and probably even the very sewage that you just flush out through the pipes every day. The internet is also very, very important. Computers in the house, wireless mobile phones, smartphones, tablets, all this stuff is becoming so very important to a household, just as important as a refrigerator, your stove, your dishwasher, or your laundry washer and dryer. It is very important to have connectivity. It is our job as technologies directors and coordinators in the world, and you, the techie in the office, if you're tasked with this, to give everybody really solid connectivity with their wireless access. That is so very critical. But you must understand coverage. Now, we do it in kind of a bedrock or a dinosaur type thing back in the old caveman days. We actually take our phone, turn the wireless on, and we find a signal app. And what the signal app allows you to do is move around the room in different parts of the room, and you look at that signal app and see where that signal is. We've even went as far as to use a laptop, and we watched how many bars are we getting on our wireless. Now, this is not scientific. This is probably not even, some of the engineers that are listening to this podcast may even be laughing right now, saying, boy, Jack, that's pretty crazy. That's pretty ludicrous how you do that. But it works for us. We found our dead spots. We found how much coverage our radios are actually pushing out. The Meraki units we have two different radios in it. And you could buy their most powerful unit with four radios in it. So one of these boxes take place of, if you buy four radios, I guarantee you it will take place of eight Cisco units. So double it. If you buy one, we bought the ones with two radios in, and we dropped four Cisco units out of the ceiling. We didn't need four. So for every four, we put two boxes up. I'm sorry, one box with two radios to equal four of the Cisco access points. It is amazing. What you're also going to get with a local controller or a clock controller that I didn't touch on is you will get one SID, one SSID. Ours is really nice with the Meraki stuff, and with the Cisco stuff too, we found it's a little bit complicated, but we figured it out. You can actually create multiple SIDs. And the reason you want to do that is you can have multiple policies and multiple protocols for those multiple SIDs. Such as we run at our high schools, we run a open wireless network. The reason I wanted to do that is the student body can bring BYOD, they can bring stuff in. So you may want to have guest access. And so many tech directors say, oh my God, Jack, I can't have guest access. They'll break in and hack into my network. You have more chances of somebody hacking into your network if you don't have guest access, because they're going to try to get on your wireless. Because remember, we live in a connected society. That's what we want to be, is connected all the time. Hey, I gave up my iPhone for 1 week. And although it was a great joy of me not to have it, I carried a regular phone and I shut the wireless off. I shut the Bluetooth and everything off of it. I just use it as a phone. I just wanted to see if I can do it and live. And you know what? I did live without being connected. Although I still had to do it at work. I still had to be on the internet at work, but my phone was not connected. But life was different as we know it today. I just recently bought my wife a smartphone. Now she's connected. Although she doesn't like Facebook and Twitter or LinkedIn or any other type of social media, she does like that she can just hit that button on the phone and say, find me the nearest ice cream shop, find me the nearest winery. Siri beeps back, beep, beep, I found it. Where would you like to go? You hit go, and it drives us right there. I mean, it guides us there. So she does like the convenience of that happening. So you should have a guest access. But if you have those local access points we talked about earlier, like the Linksys, the Ciscos, the Linksys, the D-Links, or any of that home remedies in your network, you will have multiple SSIDs, and you will have multiple security protocols. We did it, and we sat one day, and we had to work with 350 laptops, individually adding 10 different keys because we didn't know where that laptop would be in the school at any given time. That's what you're going to run into. So you want that local controller. You want that cloud controller so you can have one centralized SSID and then work everything else around that. Let's talk for a few minutes. We talked about coverage and understanding that. So get a laptop out or something. Look at signal strengths. We're going to talk a little bit about feeding our access points. How do you feed your access points and what should you feed them with? Now, I could be really, really smart and tell you we can feed our access points with bird food or with chipmunk food, but that's not really what I'm telling you. What I'm talking about is we can either feed our controller, or not our controllers, we can feed our access points. So if you're gonna have them in the ceiling, hanging from the ceiling, on a shelf, whatever you're doing with this thing, we have to get some kind of cable to it. Most of them require a network connection. I worked very, very hard with a lot of our interns, and I think this is the time that one intern was actually groveling a little bit and complaining, but I worked very hard with our interns, and I knew I wanted to do everything as home runs. What I mean by a home run is, if we have an access point on the second floor, I knew I wanted that access point to come back down to our office, to our central office, and plug into the main switch. I didn't want 6, 7, 10, 15 hops on that access point. Now, sometimes, and I'm telling you in a minute here, you can't avoid that. But if you can, and you're in the same building, run that back to your central switch. Whatever your fastest switching area is, put it in the switches. The least hops equal the best user experience. Remember that. The smaller amount of hops equals the best user experience. Because that radio, that signal doesn't have to talk and talk and talk to all those all those switches and all that gear. You just have straight signal going out from you. That is where you want it. Now, with that said, remember we have another building. You may have another office building in your complex. And that other building actually is wired back to our main offices with fiber optics. So we set up one main switch with a fiber line pumped into it in that other building, and that is where all of those access points come into. Now, folks, don't get caught up by all these vendors out there telling you you must buy a PoE switch to power over Ethernet so you can power your access points from your switch. Don't let that bother you, because you know what? If you can't make some of these runs back to that PoE and you have to buy multiple ones, those things are not cheap. That's a very, very expensive switch. What we found, we use what's called injectors. You can inject power and create power over Ethernet. Just ask your vendor for you want a looking for a wireless Cat5 or Cat6 injector, a power injector, and they will know what you're talking about. We plug those things into the wall with their power cables, and the Ethernet cable goes in one side, the access point goes in the other side, so you have one coming from the switch, one going back to the access point, and in the middle of that, there's a power cable plugged in. So it is essentially acting as a PoE injector. It's injecting power into that Cat5 or Cat6 cable. With that said, you're going to say, well, Jack, what should I use? Cat5 or Cat6? And honestly, we've been doing everything in our network right now as a Cat6. It doesn't cost you that much more money. And what I like about it is it's more shielded and it's stronger. But you know, people, this is how salesmen sell stuff. It's a stronger cable. Actually, there's more twist in Cat6. It's enhanced, so it is a better signal. Don't buy it because it's stronger. Because you know what? If you can pull Cat5 cable apart, if you can grab both sides and rip it apart, I want to meet you because you're some kind of hero in my life. And I want to meet you because you're some kind of very, very tough guy. So you're not going to pull any of these cables apart. So don't let that bother you. But Cat6, if you can, because it is enhanced, we find it has a lot better signal ratio. We find it has a lot better interference coating on it. The outside coating is better. So if you have fluorescent lights in your buildings, which you probably do, you're not getting as much interference into that Cat6 cable. So spend a little bit extra money and buy Cat6. So that is how we feed our access points. And you should feed that switch, if at all possible, feed that switch with a fiber optic cable, whatever switch you're going to go to for your access points. Because again, the multiple amount of bandwidth will equal the best user experience. Always remember that. We talked about offloading at the access points. We talked about understanding radio waves and coverage. We're going to talk just a few minutes now, and I'm just hoping you're keeping up here with me, and I'm riding along with you maybe in the car. But we're going to talk a little bit now about understanding load per unit. Now, this is, again, where people don't understand. We talk about coverage, and I want the maximum amount of density. So I want to put one access point for every user on my network in every office. Okay, so now we're going to talk load per unit. So we talked about the coverage there, and we said, well, that's overkill. But actually, the load per unit. When we had our D-Link system set up some years ago, we were having trouble with multiple logins. Normally in a classroom, we have 30 laptops open and logging in at one time. So they're going to log in at one time with those 30 laptops. And what we found was it wasn't allowing all the laptops to log in at once. So we had to start, we had a maximum amount of load per unit at any given time. So what we had to do was authenticate 5 laptops, and then we would authenticate the next 5 laptops, the next 5, and so on. So it took that 40-minute class, and it made 20 minutes of it pretty much useless for the teacher. And when I sat down to teachers and we started thinking about this, I said, this is just not good. Me as a technologist, I'm not doing my job because I'm not providing that best user experience and for that maximum education value to the student. Because now I got the teacher upset. I got the teachers kind of up. I mean, I got the kids upset. And so anyway, we didn't have the best user experience there. So what we need to do is find a better way. So I started calling around. That's when I bought the Cisco gear. The Cisco gear was taking as many logins that we could throw into it. So we started putting them in the hallways of the school, and we would now have 90 or 120 laptops logging in at one time, and they were doing just fine. Everything was running great. Until, remember, we got to that controller and we had that bottleneck. That was my downfall. That was the part I did not like. So what we did now was we did the cloud-based controller with the new Meraki system. And like I said, there's other units out there. I'm not by any means advertising for Cisco here. I'm just telling you what we do. And you'll know with these shows and my past podcast here with you that I talk about stuff I use that I believe in. And I believe in those. They just simply work. And I really enjoy using them. But now we have, at any given time, our load per unit. We put one in our cafeteria. And usually at lunchtimes, it's getting 300 simultaneous users going across there with folks, no bottleneck. Because I asked the clients, my students, I asked the teachers, and everybody says, it just simply works. And it works all of the time. It's very, very amazing. So the last part I got to talk to you about here, actually I got two more little things we're going to discuss. The next one is controlling. Who has access to the wireless? Now, and we talked a little bit about this. If you have a business, I despise when I walk into a business and I see there's a wireless signal and it comes with a damn padlock on it, I can't get on it. That is horrible in today's society. If you're a technologist and you lock it down that tight, you are not doing your job and you do not care about society in the whole and connectivity. Maybe you do and you're saying, well, Jack, wait, I got to protect my network. Folks, everybody in the world is not hackers. Most people in the world, I know computer analysts that would not know the first thing about hacking a server. They would not know the first thing about hacking wireless networks. So, and if you got really, really bad guys out there, they don't need your wireless key to get on your wireless network. So you're fighting a everlasting, ever losing battle. And that is just life in general. I told you, I've been doing this for 27 years. I know the pros and I know the cons. And the pros outweigh whatever little bit of cons there might be out there. Now, granted, if you are the federal government listening to this, if you work for NASA, if you work for the NSA, maybe you don't want to leave your wireless access open. Maybe you're a little concerned about that. Although, people are going to hack you and come in through your internet traffic anyway. They don't need to be by your building. Hell, they could be in Nigeria and they can come right in your network. If you think you're safe, good luck. Because you know what? There is nothing permanent. There's nothing permanently secured, no matter how good we think we are. And I'll go into that one night. We'll talk up another night about, and I think we talked a little bit one time before about firewalls. And I'll give you my true ideals about how safe you really, really are. And you're going to be blown away by that because this is what I've learned over the decades of doing this. So controlling access. Who has access to the wireless? Well, there is things that you can do to control your wireless. What I like to do when I do my consulting work, when I work in office spaces for people, I use MAC address authentication. Because I don't want people saying they're saying, well, I know what the web passcode is. I could type this. I can type this. I can type that. And I could type this. I don't want that. I don't want people doing that, trying to crack my systems. So I just leave it. It looks like it's plainly open. They can see it. They can see it. It's broadcasting SSID. No matter what you do all your life, you would never connect to it because it is secured by the MAC addressing of the internal computers. Now, with that said, I do set up a guest network. I do ask the person I'm working for, my client that I'm consulting for, and says, look, if you have customers coming in, clients coming in, if it's a dry cleaners, for instance, we have a dry cleaning company we work with, and they your customers come in, they're waiting for their dry cleaning. Wouldn't you like to have free Wi-Fi if they want to jump on it? And they generally will say, yeah, that would be cool if you can protect our server. Oh, sure, no biggie. So what I do is we provide a guest access, and the only thing that guest can do is they receive an IP address based on a subnet of IPs that are VLAN away from the normal IP addresses for the normal network traffic in the building, in the store, or wherever we may be. So what happens there is they're getting an address, and it's only used for internet traffic. So they can go on the internet, and the customer is happy, and they're just joyous. Folks, how do you think places like McDonald's, Dunkin' Donuts, Starbucks, how do you think these places do it? You can't get on their wireless network and hack their cash register and get a free Mocha Joe. It's not going to work. They do that just so you can sit down and get on the internet. People want to be connected to the internet. That's what people want to do. They want to be connected to the internet. They want to look at their Facebook. They want to do some Twitter. And guess what? If they're in your business, and let's just say you have a restaurant. We work with a few different restaurants in town. And I'm a customer. I come in there. I take a picture of my food. I'm so happy. You cooked it so well. It smells so wonderful. I take a picture. I want a geotag. I'm at Joe's Dunkin' Hot Dogs. It's an amazing meal. Please come visit Joe's. I get free advertising by giving that guy free wireless because they're just so happy that they have it. So that's who has control to your wireless network. Give access to anybody that comes into your business. Again, unless you're some kind of secure something that you can't. But if you have customers coming in, give them some kind of access. Now, the last thing I'm going to talk to you is the truth behind WEP, which we understand is very weak protocol, WEP, versus the new protocol, the newest protocol in the world of wireless security called WPA. And I know, don't email me, there's millions of the other ones out there, and or maybe do comment on these shows and say what you use. We currently use both in our elementary center because we cannot have it open in there for various reasons because the kids are too young to handle it. Apparently, I don't really know what the concept there is. I don't believe it, but that's what I'm told, and I have other people that I work for that says, look, this is what we should do. So we did it. Anyway, WEP, or web security, is said to be very crackable. People can crack WEP very, very easily just by using programs on a laptop. They can scan your network, they can find your code, and oh my God, they're gonna get on your wireless, and oh no, they're gonna get on the internet. Jesus, what did we do? We just gave away the whole shop. Folks, relax a little bit, sleep a little bit easier at night, take a break, breathe a little bit, okay? Not everybody in the world wants to get into your registers and your stores. There is people out there that love to do that, but the people that can do it are going to come right in. If you have WEP, WPA, WPPG, WGEG, whatever you have, they're going to come into your network. Thank God. Amen. That's just life, folks. Hackers are hackers. They're very good at what they do. They've been doing it a long time. They have conventions in Vegas. They have the big, you know, black hat convention things where people come in and they hack each other. They are so good at what they do. They will come in no matter what you do. I know you don't feel safe right now. I know you feel scared. Like, crap, Jack. Oh, my God, I never realized it. Folks, if you've been in this business for any length of time, you realize it. You know that's true. It's our job to masquerade it, make it sound good. We have firewalls. We have NATs. We have all this stuff to protect our network. It's our job to do that. That's what we do. We give everybody that warm, fresh feeling of being protected. And we do our very best to protect our data. I do, because I am responsible for a lot of data. Believe me, tons of data that I feel is very safe. But on the other hand, I tell people, no matter what kind of firewall we have, we can have an intruder come in. We can always have a break-in. Just like I tell my kids here at home, no matter where you put your car, no matter what kind of lock you put on it, you roll the windows up. If somebody wants the car, they're going to take it because that's what they know to do. They bust the window out. They jimmy the lock out of the ignition, and they take your car. That's what criminals do. So anyway, if I had to pick one, if I had to secure my network and I wanted one and I was going to make everybody feel really, really comfortable in life, I would pick the WPA and not the WEP is what I would pick. I did find a website, and I'll put this in the show notes tonight, that gives you a listing. It's actually from Cisco blogs I found, and they talk very extensively about the security protocols and how the security protocols work. The two other WPA protocols designed for different networks, and there's two now. It's WPA2-PSK. You may have heard about that. And then there's another one now called WPA2-ENT mode. So they talk extensively about that, and I am not going to talk on this podcast about that because it's very extensive. I just kind of read it over today when I was doing research for tonight's show, and I thought I would mention it to you. But like I said, I will put it in the show. And when I talk about the show notes, if you ever look for those, I don't, you know, the old time podcasters, we used to set up wikis and all that, and I don't do that because it's very, very time consuming to keep that together. So what I do when I post a show on the blog, so you'll find, you go to tipsfromtheserveroom.com, and when you do that, with the show, you'll have the, you know, the topics of the show, and I talk a little bit about it. There'll be a link there, and it'll say blogs.cisco.com, small business, something, something, something. And it, you can read that. It's a very short little read there, but you'll understand more about the wireless security and how those protocols work with each other and how that works out. So hopefully that will help you there and get you more acquainted with wireless protocols. And folks, don't be like our old tech director they had before they hired me at the school. They had a guy 10, 15 years ago. They wanted to start bringing wireless in, and wireless was starting to be a topic of discussion at conferences and stuff. And he said, look, we can't have wireless because it's insecure and our networks will be very vulnerable to the world. That's somebody that don't take time to read, understand, and wrap yourself around wireless. And remember, years ago, I told you, we started with the little little home routers on my network. That's what I knew how to do, and that's what I understood. And very, very quickly, we grew out of that. But the controllers we have now with the Meraki stuff and the cloud-based controllers, we are growing our wireless every single year. I mean, this year we're looking at purchasing a new 350 Chromebooks. And if you want to see your wireless access points get nailed every day and see your wireless usage go through the roof, put in Chromebooks, because everything they do is demanding. Everything they do is hitting the wireless network, just like everything else we have. I mean, iPads are pretty mediocre. But when people are doing, you know, Google Docs and Google Excel sheets and Google PowerPoints, they tend to really use up the bandwidth on those wireless networks. And that's just part of life. So keep building your wireless networks. Keep understanding it. By all means, if you have any questions, you can email me and I'll try to put a little bit of light to that, or I will find an answer for you. If I can help you out, I will do that. Because, folks, if you learn nothing else from my podcast, learn one thing, that I'm here to pay it forward. I've suffered through my life with schools. I've suffered through my life with all the certification trainings. And I don't want to see other people out there suffering to try to learn this stuff. That's why this podcast was created, to try to put stuff into perspective and give you a little bit of feeling of how things work. And maybe you know how it works and you know everything about wireless. And by all means, if you know more than what I talked about tonight, email me and pay it forward to me and give me some knowledge from you, because I absorb it and I push it out there. So I'm a two-way street. My brain works so many different ways. And sometimes my wife will say that scares her a lot of times, the way my brain works. But that's why I started doing these podcasts some time ago, because I like pushing information out there to you. So folks, I hope this podcast tonight helped you out. And I know sometimes I hear from some of you out there, I know there's a lot more listeners than what there was just a month ago. Again, I credit that to becoming a member of the Tech Podcast Network. By all means, I want to thank those folks, if they listen to this show, of inducting my show in. And thank you for bringing more listeners to the podcast, because it's always great. The numbers thing, I think, I tell my wife, hey, I'm up to, you know, 100 listeners, 1,000 listeners. That is, and she goes, why don't you just pat yourself on the back? But it is. It's the reward for the podcaster to have you listening. If you don't listen, there would be no reason for us to podcast. There's no reason to record these. You know, I could be working on another project. But it's because of you being out there that allows us to do this and for you to listen. All right, folks. So with that, we're going to be wrapping up tonight's show. I want to thank everybody out there very, very much for signing up for the server courses. Those courses are really, really going strong, and I can't tell you how many positive emails I've received, and I know I should pull those up and read you some of those. But again, that is paying it forward, because I received emails that said, Jack, I don't know about your course because it's only $200, and I don't know if it's any good because a lot of places charge $2,000 or $5,000. Again, I'm paying it forward. And I just charge the minimum charge here just for the time of putting it together. I don't want to overcharge people. I want you to be able to learn this stuff. I don't want you to have to go to a college or somewhere else to try to learn about Windows Server when I'm right here and I can help you out with it. And also remember, if you don't have high-speed internet, you can still order the server videos on DVD. Just go over to my sister website called jackstechcorner.com. And there's a pull-down link. Just click that link and you'll see the two DVDs in there, Windows Server 2008 R2 and Windows Server 2012 R2. So folks, if you want to learn more about Windows Server 2008 R2, Windows Server 2012 R2, or VMware ESXi Server from A to Z, from install to administration, please sign up for my online courses, and you can do that at tipsfromtheserverroom.com. Look for the online class link at the top of the page. These courses are self-paced. You watch a video, you take a little quiz. It's very, very simple quizzes. Don't think, I got an email one day that said, Jack, man, I haven't been in high school for years. How am I ever going to pass one of your quizzes? It's very easy. If you get stuck, go back and just rewatch the video because the answer is in the individual videos. Once you complete the course, I will mail you a certificate. People use those to put with their resumes. They use them to hang on their walls. It's a very, very good-looking certificate. That's why I don't email. I don't want to email you the thing and have you print it. I print it out, and I make sure it looks very good, and then I actually mail that to you in the mail. So once again, you can sign up for those online courses at tipsfromtheserverroom.com. Folks, have a great work week, if there is such a thing, and we hope there is. We hope that all your servers are humming well. We hope your networks are not crashing and dying, and we hope your computers will keep on humming along for you each and every day. And if you come up with a problem, remember, drop me an email at jackstechcorner@gmail.com and call that voicemail line at 724-701-0550. Let me hear about you, your network, your issues, or maybe even something about tonight's topics, and we'll get that on a show, on a future show. Thank you so much. I'll talk to you next time on Tips from the Server Room. Bye for now, everybody. Just listen to Tips from the Server Room with your host, Jack. If you have any questions, please drop me a comment at tipsfromtheserverroom.com. Thanks again for tuning in and downloading the shows. Now sit back, relax, and listen to the remainder of the music. We'll see you next week on Tips from the Server Room. So long.